I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A man become preeminent, he is expected to have enthusiasms. Enthusiasms. What are mine? What draws my admiration? What is that which gives me joy?
Dames.
Baseball.
Come on in to the Bull Hitter Podcast. I'll be bringing my co-host Dom, the Bullpen Guru, in very shortly. We'll be going over the NFBC main event moves from last week, our moves, league-wide trends, and all that fun stuff. Just a reminder, come check out the Bull Hitter Patreon. Over on patreon.com, put Bull Hitter Fantasy Baseball into the search bar, and it'll take you to my site. You got a free week trial if you want to come check it out. Got all fun stuff there. You got the extra additional launch angle episodes that we put over on the Bull Hitter Fantasy on the Patreon. So come check it out. Doing about 7-8 pods per week over there on top of the public stuff. So appreciate anyone who's part of it and been supporting me. Come checking me out on Twitter at Deadpool Hitter and enjoy the episode. Peace. All right, welcome on into the Pool Hitter Podcast, your destination for actionable fantasy resources. It's now Wednesday, April 24th.
Oh, shit.
I'm here with the Bullpen Girl. Yeah, he had the quick, oh shit, it is Wednesday. We started this conversation on Tuesday. And not only do we podcast long, we chat long. What's up, Dom?
Yeah, not too much.
Just living this wonderful fantasy life.
This week, it's just been...
It's got all the feels,
the
right?
Waiting for the bats to come alive. Pretty much in all my leagues, I go in every night and I'm just like, let me pop into the live scoring, and it's like, you know, 4 for 30, no homers, and it's like, need the bats to start waking up a little bit. But most of my big money leagues are doing pretty well. So pitching's carrying me early though. So, and as we know, that can go away very quickly. So I would feel a lot better if bats started coming alive. And then today we started taking on some hitting injuries, so that'll be a new experience for us with the Lane Thomas thing. Hopefully his knee's good, and then I don't know what's going on with Wilson Contreras, but his hand or his wrist keeps acting up, so gotta weather that storm. But other than that, I can't complain.
Well, you could complain about Steven Matt.
I mean, I have them in enough places that it's annoying, but I didn't like the matchup where I could, so we ate them in the ultimate, and then I took them on in one main, but I had them benched in my 1500 auction and my other main that I have them in. So I did at least somewhat decent job of avoiding that, but just when our ratios are starting to get cleaned up a bit in the ultimate, and Matt just takes a big shit on him, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Those starts really can really damage you for sure.
Yeah. You know, we just need a little scoring adjustment. I watched zero of the game, but we just need a little, like, you know, scoring adjustment tomorrow. Get like three of those seven earned runs, get them unearned for us, and then it becomes a little more palatable.
Yeah, that's it. I'm not a fan of scoring adjustments, but sometimes I am.
In this instance, yeah.
In this instance, I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll be monitoring that Twitter account that I always kind of retweet and shit like that whenever they have scoring adjustments that are helpful for my team. So I'll keep you posted on that.
All right, keep me posted. I'm not waiting in the wings for the scoring adjustment. It's not going to happen. But yeah, it's so early to think. One good thing that Toby Backflip Crazy always reminds me of, that it's so early and the variance in the rest of the season projections too, and a player, you know, it takes some time to even things out and make things find its balance, you know, find its, like, its weight. And member of the Discord, Brandon Gavitt, he shared with us that cool chart, the monthly chart of the rest of the season projections and how it becomes more accurate as the, you know, as the season comes along. And that's exactly that. The standings can easily balance out. You could just look at Dylan White's photo from his overall championship last year with Brian Slack, and it was like May 12th, and they were, you know, 400th overall and 10th in their league. You know, it's still time, you know. Just, and that's why my eyes get fixated on all my terrible teams, instead of teams that are doing good or well or not shitty. I hate that my eyes go there all the time on this, on my teams.
There's not much to fix when your team's, you know, in first, second, whatever. But when you got a team in, you know, 550th place, there's a lot to do there's a lot of ways that you can make it better. So kind
of, I'm looking for ways to make these teams better, but one of them, I think, is just magically needs a ton of help, you know.
Yeah,
a ton of not only Strider, but Albies, Berger, and then I lost both my catchers, Francisco Alvarez and Sean Murphy. So I had to talk about the drops of Francisco Alvarez this weekend, but I was one of them because I didn't want to do it. I actually wanted to just try and stash as long as I could until, but if it was just one catcher injury, I would have held it. But yeah, it was him or Murphy, and Murphy's going to be back soon. And I was like, I can't do this. I can't have Berger, Albies, and both catchers on my bench with a team that is worst in the league in offense. I mean, just dreadful. I can't stand looking at this team batting 220 and have like six homers, it feels like. It's just an awful team. It's got awful results right now, and I'm just so fixated on it.
You're getting Albies back this weekend, and then, I mean, how much longer for Murphy? I haven't even seen an update on him.
He's doing everything but swinging, apparently.
All right. Well, yeah, that's not important.
I think that's the last thing they want him to try.
Because yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. With the
catching, throwing is fine, but
yeah,
doing the torque and swing motion, which that's the motion he hurt himself in. So
right.
But yeah, so, you know, hitting that early week wave of emotions of regretting starts and sets and all that fun stuff. But how was your fab this weekend? Did you crush it?
I did all right. I was texting you, I think, like, the one thing that killed me, this was like the worst one this year, was Luis Garcia was available in one of my mains.
Lugar.
And I cut him a couple weeks ago in one main. And
yes, you did.
At the time you were like, that was a mistake. But this wasn't that league. This was a league that he sat there. He hadn't gotten picked up all year for some reason. So he was there, and I was like thinking about picking him up last week, but I wanted the speed in David Hamilton, so I prioritized Hamilton over Garcia, and I got Hamilton. And so I was like, all right, I'm gonna look at last week's bids. I think the average was like $24 for Garcia. And I was like, I really want him. He had a good week. So I'm like, I'm going to double the average and then add 10. So I was at 58 on him. and he went for 60 in that league. So that one killed me because I was like thinking about if I wanted to even go up from there on Sunday, but I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do any Sunday tweaking. I spent a lot of time Saturday night. I was up to like almost four doing my fab on Saturday night. And
the old tweak, man, the tweaks can get you,
which is a weird thing for me. Cause I'm normally up to the last minute scrambling. I'm a last minute Sunday scrambler fab, I would say. Like, you know, my process is try to get the kids in bed asleep as close to like seven as I can on Sunday and give myself the most amount of time on the East Coast till 10. And that's normally when I'm just kind of setting everything at the last minute. I'll try to do as much as I can beforehand. But this week I was like, you know what? I got a lot of sleep leading up to Saturday night, and I felt good. And I was like, let me just do it Saturday and take some of the stress off myself on Sunday. And so I did that, and my Sunday tweaks were just kind of like removing anybody that got hurt or, you know, got sent down or anything like that that happened. But like, I wasn't really fucking with any of my bids. And yeah, so even though I wanted to, I tried to just stay disciplined and tell myself like, don't do anything. Like, so if I had bumped it up, I might've gotten them, but I don't know. Other than that, I got a lot of Michael Massey. I had him as kind of the backup for Garcia and a target where I wanted to get rid of all my David Hamilton shares. So I got a lot of Michael Massey. Got
you
a couple.
Moved on quick, huh?
What's that?
You moved on quick.
Yeah, I moved on. Yeah. No, he's Hamilton complete bust. Should have paid more attention to his defensive struggles, I think, but. Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna wait around. I mean, I think, you know, once they moved Rafaela to short, and then with all the injuries they took on with Cassis and Devers and, you know, everything else that was going on with O'Neill out too, like the fact that Hamilton still couldn't really get in the lineup much, to me, tells me all I needed to know with Hamilton. So, yeah, he's dead to me now. He's gone.
No, and I think that's like honestly one of the best values of like being in a very active Discord where people are talking about that a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Just not even him in general, any other player. It's like, you know, I don't have a column in my spreadsheet for defense, mm-hmm. you know? And maybe some people have it included in their models or whatever. So obviously it doesn't take a lot to go and look at it, right? But it's also, it's like, where do you look and which defensive metric, you know, is the one to follow?
Watch
and then
the game,
and yeah, and then you have to watch the game. But that's the thing, you watched, I watched the one game and I was just so shocked how someone so gifted athletically doesn't move right at shortstop. And I was like, oh man, this is. But still, you just, like you said, though, injuries on top of injuries, no way they're going to need him, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. I didn't get any of Hamilton. I had him in for like $7-$8 just in case. Like, it was a just cheap bid. I knew I probably wasn't going to get him, but I figured in some leagues he would go for that little. And so even in that spec, they just kept taking my, like, just checking him out. I'm like, man, he's just started losing PT.
Yeah. Yep, it happened pretty much like, you know, the day after that Sunday fab, like that Patriots day, like they just said, all right, Rafaela, you're playing short, and the Braves going to get all the at-bats and right, and that's what we're going to do. And I mean, it made sense. Like, I was asking questions like leading up to that Sunday fab because I was like, I asked, you know, people that I trust, and I was like, Rafaela is there. Like, best shortstop, right? Like, is there a chance that they just move him to short? And they were like, no. Like, they like his defense in center, and they value his defense in center. And Cora keeps saying that Hamilton's going to play against righties. And, you know, so that's the challenging thing is, like, there are certain managers, either their actions or their quotes that are just tough to trust, and And so, like, I'm find myself kind of avoiding certain situations now. Like last week, I was very hesitant on Blake Perkins just because of how he handled that like infield situation with Joey Ortiz playing like three or four days and then not playing. You know, like he played three or four games against a righty, and then literally righties are coming up on the schedule, and like then it's Oliver Dunn, and then more righties are coming on, and then Oliver Dunn doesn't play for 4 days, and Ortiz is back in, and it's just, there's no real rhyme or reason for like how he's shuffling guys in and out, and he's doing it like it's not like an every other day thing, so you kind of get the feeling that like, oh, the playing time is shifting towards this guy, and it's not, and you're, you know, it's just changing on a dime without anything that from like our perspective as a fantasy player can like, you know, gather anything for. There's just no pattern to follow. So like him and then Cora as well, Alex Cora, you know, like they say Rob Refsnyder is gonna, while he's on rehab, they're like he's gonna mix in at first base. And you know, it's like, why the hell are they going to mix Rob Refsnyder in at first base when you have Tristan Cassis? And Cassis gets hurt, so I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, shit. I was like, maybe Rob Refsnyder's going to get a lot of playing time at first base now that he's back in the majors. And then Alex Cora says, Rob Refsnyder's not in consideration for first base at bats right now. I was like, last week you just said he was going to mix in at first. Then you lose your everyday first baseman and he's not an option at all. So like, what the fuck has changed? And like, so that's where I'm just like, I can't do anything with these teams from like, from my perspective as a fantasy player, because I clearly just have no read on what's going on and how they're handling their team. So like, if you,
I think a lot of people feel that way, man,
you know, so if Red Sox or Brewers come on the wire in my leagues that you're in, just know I'm not going to be bidding on them. So,
yeah, I mean, I think even like Jeff Zimmerman showed in the mining news that coach Stephen Vogt, right, who's like basically said, he admitted to just riding the hot hand. So he took a 2-game sample. And like, oh, Estevan Florio, I like, you know, had a good 2 games. Let's put him in, you know. And it,
yeah,
how do you know that? You know, we can look at roster resource all we want and digest all the fucking lineup trends that we can, but we don't know. Like, hey, I would love to look at L7 and be like, oh yeah, I trust this, you know.
Yeah.
But we don't know that the coaches wouldn't really do that. Mm-hmm. It's pretty nuts. It's not easy.
Yeah, I don't know. Got a lot of Massey. Moved on from Hamilton. Moved on from Oliver Dunn. Got rid of those shares and just pretty much picked up Massey. I don't know. Sean Bouchard, I got in a bunch of spots as well. So that's kind of, you know, like I told people, I was like, this week in Fab, like I don't see myself going after the guys like Clase or Pajes or anything like that. I was like, I see a lot of Jock Peterson and a lot of Adam Duvall on my teams this week. Like that was what I thought. And I didn't get any Adam Duvall. I got, I think one share. Yeah. I got one share of Jock. I got a lot of Sean Bouchard. So I think I was a little more aggressive than what other people were. Yeah. So, and then you and I, you know, again, in the ultimate, I'm thinking we're going to have a ton of drops, and then the Cubs closer situation comes up. So we have to hang on to Hector Neris for another week. So, It's like, I come into the week thinking we're going to have like maybe 2, 3, 4 drops to make. And we only end up dropping Wade Miley, who ended up getting hurt the next day. So that ended up being, I think, a smart move, but
yeah, Neris was a little conflicting too, because I mean, me and Dylan White, we dropped him in our league and last period of Fab,
right?
Because we were speculating and holding on that too, but and as we were mentioning, he wasn't really good.
No,
and that was the thing about him possibly leading into saves. And I think what also made Mark Leiter really popular was if you looked at it and you're like, well, Neris isn't pitching that great, and it's also okay. So do I trust the 7 innings of him this year, or do I trust that sample of him last year where he was lights out and the splitter was insanely good, you know? And
yeah,
then your brain starts playing that. It's just, you just that you just have to find it, and then you're looking at. I found myself. Then I was looking at. Well, does he always start this slow?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at every year, like March and April, like, you know, this is what I tend to do. I just run into useless information like that. But and so like Neves wasn't easy even in previous weeks, because I always felt that he might have landed into an opportunity. But when you're not pitching great, you're like, well, what are you going to do with this opportunity? And then then do you speculate on the guy like Leiter, who's been pitching the best in the last, you know, pitching great since the beginning of last year or so.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I didn't have Alzolay anywhere, and I took a lot of Hector Neris in big drafts, and I moved on from him pretty much everywhere but our ultimate, and
still there, baby.
Yeah, and he's still there. And then, but then, like this weekend, I was looking at it because I was like, do I want to re-add Neris? Do I want to speculate on somebody else, and or like, you know, so that's what I kind of looked at. And I was just like, as much as I faded Alzolay and I, you know, I'm concerned about his injury at the end of last year, and that's pretty much why I was that, coupled with how Council felt about him in spring training. Like, if you look at his performance and look at the rest of that bullpen's performance, like I do think that Alzolay is going to get the job back relatively soon. Like, I don't think that this removal from the closer job is like a, he's not an option to close anymore. I think it's a, he's blown a couple of saves and I want him to regain some confidence. That's my interpretation of it. Now, whether he can, if this is an injury thing, you know, that's kind of a different conversation. But like, for me, I think Alzolay is going to end up getting the job back. I don't know if you feel the same way, but like, yeah, like Neris has been god awful. Like, when I looked at his stats over the weekend, he had a 21% K rate and a 25% walk rate. So he's like literally a negative K minus BB rate. Like, he's in 3-0 counts the same percentage of times he's in 0-2 counts, and that's 14% of his counts he's in an 0-2 count, and 14% of the time he's in a 3-0 count. So that's really bad from a reliever, especially a closer too. So like, he's not really doing anything to earn Council's trust in the ninth inning, at least in my opinion. The only thing is he's got a ton of balls on the ground, so like, maybe he's getting a little BABIP unlucky, but still, you know, walking guys is something he can control, and he's doing it more often than he's striking out guys out. So like, you know, I think that it's a sticky situation, and like, I just think that even by the time he gets straightened out, Alzolay might be back as a closer. So I don't know. I was not bidding heavily on anybody in this bullpen.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Got your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I don't know. I didn't draft Alzolay all year. I think the elbow injury at the end of last year kind of scared me away in all of Draft Champions and Gladiators. Probably the only reliever I didn't take once.
And a lot of it had to stem with that. Mm-hmm. A lot of it had to stem from the way he ended this last season as well, where like the zone contact, O swing, everything went the wrong way. K percentage, get a walk, like everything just went the wrong way. The homer per nine since the All-Star break of last year is almost two. It's 1.8. So he's got some issues, Alzoy.
Yeah.
I don't know if he, you know, I think if Merriweather was still here, it would have been all his.
Yes.
And I think right now they're just trying to figure out who it is that since Merriweather isn't there. And they're probably a prime team to make a move early on for a reliever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So I'm looking at this bullpen and like it's a lot of guys that just didn't make it as starters, like Drew Smyly, like Hayden Wesneski. You know, I don't know. It's very, I agree. Like they definitely need to make some kind of trade or get somebody in, but I felt the same way. I was texting somebody, I forget who, and I was just like, yeah, it's too bad. I have a bunch of Merriweather in like DCs and stuff like that. And he was so good last year. And, he was really the guy I was speculating on in DC season. And then as we got closer, I think once Neris signed, I was like, all right, I'm going to start grabbing Neris as well. But yeah, with Merriweather out on the 60-day IL, he's not going to factor in, which is probably too bad because he could probably make a little noise right now in this spot. But yeah, I don't know. My take on it was Leiter's pitching the best of the three, but he's not like, you know, far and away outperforming Alzolay other than the home run issue that you brought up. Like, you know, so... That was just my read on it. I think the money that my personal opinion is, I think the money that's spent on Neris and Leiter this weekend is going to be too much. It's going to be an overpay. And I think if Alzolay isn't hurt, he's going to end up back in the job in the next week or two. That's my hot take. I don't really give too many hot takes on this. So. But yeah.
I like it. I thought it was going to be a quiet week too. And actually, in my two teams that are really lacking in offense, I mentioned them already. I went up and got Páez, because I think I'm pretty good that I can grind together and fab and stream together a whole bunch of decent stats, or at least I'll try. And I think I can accomplish some of my goals, but sometimes you don't hit it. And sometimes you look in your specific league, or I think more and more as we're noticing because of managerial tendencies and not really having so many guys play full time anymore, it's sometimes you can't piece together it on the wire. And so my brain went to for where maybe for the teams that are doing worse, I would rather just hold on to money and try to always be able to chip away in volume, at least when you're behind so early in offense. But I think, you know what, I'm just going to do the opposite and kind of just look for an impact bat. And hopefully Páez trumps all the guys, all the freeloaders that you can get off the wire.
You know,
the Robbie Grossman type. So you just try to stick for a week of, oh, he's a leadoff hitter on a shit team. And
right.
Just go with it. So I got him in a couple of leagues. I also got him in my shared team with Dylan and got some Massey too. I'm shocked he only went in 40 out of the 54 leagues or whatever, how many leagues they are. I know he doesn't play every day, but his like career numbers and his steam of 600 screams like he's not a bench. Like he shouldn't be on the wire, but I totally get if people aren't so bought into the usage of him, but he did start versus a lefty, which kind of got me excited once already, right, on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So last year he started 33% of the time versus lefties. If that even increases to 50, like today we saw Lugar get a start at versus a lefty. I kept saying that in my Fab article, right?
Yeah.
I think the last 2 weeks I was recommending Garcia, like, go out and get him. The guy's got a 15% barrel rate. He's crushing the ball. He's a career 277 hitter with speed, power. Like, you can't get average guys like that, even late in drafts, never mind on the wire. And it was just a matter of David Martinez not messing with the kid like last year. And it's like little by little, I'm like, they're going to have to give him lefty plate appearance. And tonight he got the start. It was Paxton, which is huge. So I got, so I got some Massey. I got a Jaime Candelario, my main event CLQ.
Yeah.
He was dropped in the week before. And so that was one of those ones where, man, it took me, because, you know, we can have comps for players that come up and like archetype that we always talk about, right? The rookie, and we can do our math and try to get close to what we think the number is going to be, or the two-star pitcher. But when it's a, I always struggle with these guys, you know, like, what was it? Brandon Nimmo last week.
Went for like,
like a guy who, again, Jaime Candelario is not a stud at all, but he's a dual eligible guy who's going to probably hit 18 or 20 homers in Great American Ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
And again, not like a fucking league winner, but he's part of a team that's like crucial, I think, to have on the wire. Like last week, Nimmo went for five something, right? So, in my brain, I'm like, well, how much does Candelario go for and how much am I willing to pay for it? So I had it at like 104, and then I'm like, maybe just go 70, and I landed on 94, and I won 94.88. So that felt good to just get
That's
like,
good.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good restraint. I feel like in the rare instance wherever I have one of these guys that's like, like, for instance, in my OLAC this week, Brandon Pfaadt was available, and there's probably the only OLAC he was in, and I was like, I really want him. He shouldn't be on the wire. I'm gonna get him. And I went 313. The backup was 188. And it's just like, whenever I find myself in these situations where there's a guy that's like only available in my league, I get like overzealous and just overbid, just because I'm like, this is gonna be like a frenzy. And I get a 188 was like a very strong bid, but I just think I get too like excited. I'm like, oh wow, this is actually like a really helpful piece. It's not just flavor of the week like streamer guy. This is gonna be an impact pitcher. I'm not just looking for his two starts here. I'm looking for the rest of the season contribution.
That's a good bid, so though. That's a way to be aggressive.
Yeah. I mean, I'd much rather be aggressive on somebody that I feel fully confident in that will be on my team versus just kind of like, I don't really know if they're going to be on my team in 2 weeks. So I have no regrets, but it's just, it's more a comment on, you know, the ability to nail that bid on Candelario for you. Because if I saw him, especially with like the first base and third base injuries and stuff like that, I'd be like, oh, there's going to be somebody in this league that is going to want to pony up like $200 for him. So I knowing myself, I'd probably be like over 200. So that's a great grab by you. I mentioned that at the time, but I'll reiterate that.
Yeah, I was shocked. I was like shocked. I thought I had a decent chance of winning him, but not a great chance, you know. Thought was available in my online championships, and you know the online championships are wild, man. What a crazy bidding on those. You get some players that barely go in mains and they're going OCs for like hundreds of dollars. You're like, where did this come from? And then you have, you know, I know Fott was available in my OC. Our buddy Gills that we always talk about, you know, and his, you know, spending ways that he loves to talk about too. And so he's in that league. The first thing you do is how much money does Gills have? You know, and then you start from there. You know, but glad he was already drained a little bit. I don't even know if he had any interest in Fott. I don't know if he's a Fott fan, but that's where my brain went first. But again, he's a pitcher that I have in a lot of DCs and 15 team leagues and 12 team leagues as well. So I saw his name available and I was like, I'm just gonna go out and get it. I just picked the number. I landed on 248. Back up with 71. Do I feel stupid about it? I don't know. But I did, again, a pitcher I really trust, you know, besides the surface numbers that don't seem to show. I think he's only walked six or seven batters this year, right?
Yeah.
I just thought it was worth it at that price. Even some of the other bids in one of my OCs, you know, Jason Adams was still available. And I think he was like 90% owned in OCs at that point too. And so I was like, all right, you know, the Fairbanks news, I'm like, maybe 54 is a good number. It was no runner up bid. And not that I thought it was going to be close to mine, but I need saves in that league. And I was willing to be a little bit of aggressive. And it's just funny how it just the runner up bid just make me feel like, oh man, I'm just wasting money on so many of these guys. But I try to keep the streams really low in the OCs, you know, just have a long line of streams, all $3 to $7, whatever. But sometimes you want to pony up for a player like Tyler Stevenson. I was holding Murphy, and I was like, you know what, Tyler Stevenson's available. I might as well just fucking make the move. The kid's crushing the ball, set his max EV, bowing it up, and doing the things like we always thought he was able to do. So like, I'll just pony up and go to Stevenson, $32, back up six. All right. Nice talking to you. But what are you going to do?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Andy Páez.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was in the same boat as you in terms of Páez, where, like, in one league, I was like, you know, I had a bunch of kind of, I think I was starting both Lawrence Butler and J.J. Bleda in the outfield there, just due to injuries and stuff like that. And I kind of just like looked at the team and I was like, I could use like one more like impact bat, especially from the outfield. So I think my bids for Páez everywhere else were like in the 20s, but I was like, I'm going to get a little aggressive here and take a shot. Just get a piece of the Dodgers offense. And, you know, you and I were talking on Sunday and I was like, you know, you feel good about him, and you said that you did. So I was like, you know, I'll take my shot here with Páez, because, and I dumped Butler and Bleda where I had them everywhere. I think just with all those outfielders coming back, and you can kind of see it, they're just kind of platooning like everybody there. So
yeah,
they got a bunch of lefties coming up. The A's do. So I just wanted to get out from those guys, just bad offense. And then if they're not playing every day, I didn't want it. So, I grabbed him, but my concern with him, like everywhere else, he was guy, you know, obviously just like high K rate thus far in the majors. I would have been curious to see what his price would have been without that Sunday homer against the Mets that probably, you know, so many Met fans that are in these leagues saw. But I mean, yeah, I looked, you know, like swing strike rate wasn't as high as you would expect given what his K rate was in the majors thus far. So I felt pretty good. Seems like he's going to be playing center when there's a lefty, and then playing one of the corners, whether left or right. You know, I just think there's going to be playing time there for him. So, you know, anytime you can get a chance to get a bite of this Dodgers offense, if it's going to be even a strong side platoon guy, you got to do it. So I grabbed him. But in terms of the overall contest, obviously he was added in all 57 leagues. His average price was $102. What'd you get him for?
I got him for 122 to a backup of 113 twice, Dom.
There you go.
That happened twice.
Nice. 122 to 113.
Yeah, the same exact thing happened twice. And it's our good buddy, our fellow meatball at Tunks.
He was the backup.
Yeah, he's in both of my leagues. And that I got him in one auction and one main. And I believe he readjusted his price down.
There you go. So, don't fuck with your bids. That's the lesson of the night.
Yeah, I felt good too in that he really didn't have a problem striking out like pretty much throughout his career. I mean, it was just like a good number in the minors, the 22s, the 24s. Those don't scare you. And he projected well. Usually these rookies, they come up and you might see a high K rate. And he still projected pretty decently, like 26, 27 across the board. So I was like, all right, this it seems good. And the barrel rate in the minors and what we saw in spring training from him just hitting missiles. I was like, all right, you know. And the news on Hayward, too. That was the thing I was keeping my eye on extra. I think a little bit extra. Just making sure that he was nowhere close to be returning, you know.
Right.
And
right.
He's not close. Yeah. So. And like you mentioned, I think that was a big thing for me, too. Seeing him take over center and right instantly. It's like, oh, man, if this is the full-time player, you know, maybe we have a little bit more confidence in projecting him to, you know, obviously have to come through. And I think the Sunday text definitely hit. I don't think it hit as hard as Mitchell Parker did, but it definitely hit him a little bit.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. But a pretty similar week to like last year's, the same week last year in terms of overall spend for the format.
Yeah. So, This year the average spent per team was $67. This week last year the average spent per team was $68. So pretty much spot on. Obviously more leagues this year, but the average price per ad was $28 this year. It was $31 last year. Thus far, on average, each team, you know, the average team has spent $229 in FAB year to date. So you have like $771 remaining on average. This time last year we had spent $296. So on average there's about $70 more per team available as opposed to last year. So you know, the accumulation of the last 4 weeks being under where we spent last year is pretty much like leading us to this point.
It's ready to get aggressive, right? Once we start getting some bigger call ups and it's gonna start getting nuts.
Yeah. I mean this week last year we had Mason Miller, Jaron Duran, and Lucchesi all as the like guys that were added in.
I love how you just lumped Lucchesi into that.
Hey, he was the third player added in all leagues this week last year. So yeah, it is funny though. But we'll do our weekly thing. We'll look at the guys that we spent up for this time last year. Just as a reminder, so Mason Miller was added in all leagues for an average of 208. He was fucking great until he got hurt. And you know, this was as I was watching him on Monday afternoon, I was like thinking about our conversation in Vegas where you were just like, I'm thinking about just taking Mason Miller, like he's as a closer in one of these last couple of drafts. Like he'd been like, you know, just to get like an exciting, like lights out arm. And I was like, if you want to go ahead, I don't trust his arm's going to hold up and it's going to be terrible. And like he's insane. Like, did you end up getting him anywhere or no?
I got him in the auction. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I think for like $7.
I think it's going to work where he's just like, he's throwing like 15 pitches at a time for like an inning, you know, few games that the A's have that put him in the save situation. Like, I think he's going to be able to hold up and just like keep dominating. So
I think I wanted to take him in a main too. And when I was ready to, definitely he went right before I was ready to take him. Because I don't know, I just, the whole off season, I felt scared to do it in like draft champions.
Yeah.
Even with as many as I did, I still like, I don't know if I want to go this way, even though the projections, even with him being a hybrid, like Hunt, like even with him having like a Brian Abreu line with a little bit more saves, still being so good, you know, projection wise. I totally heard your voice a lot. When I heard every time I thought about Mason Miller and I hear you say the same thing, like his elbow is going to explode or it's not holding up. And I'm like, fuck, you know, it's always there. But again, that's why we have a discussion, you know, and then we talk about things and, but Mason Miller. So yeah, I did get him in one league. It's in my auction league. where I really tried heavily to dominate pitching and even saves, but Spencer Strider killed that one. Mm. And but yeah, I have him, Bednar, and Romano, because I got the Romano. So that's what happened. I got the Romano and the Bednar,
like, injury discount.
And I got Romano for $9. I think maybe Bednar for $12. And I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna go three relievers here. And I think I threw out Miller, if I'm not mistaken. I was like, I want to know now if I'm gonna get him for a decent price. And it was, I was like, yeah, let's do it. Fuck it.
Yeah. That's what I'm in my CLQ main. I got like Johan Duran like round 10 or something like that. And I already had Edwin Diaz, so I was like, all right, I'm just gonna take Duran here. I'll wait a month, 2 months, whatever it is, for him to get back, and just have like the two guys. They were my number one and two reliever, like, as I was drafting all offseason. So I was like, I can get my one and two closers, not have to worry about Fab. And then, like, last week I got Kirby Yates at like a decent price. So now I'm hoping I can just roll with three good closers that I got, you know, one at the injury discount. So I'm just waiting for Durant to get back, and then I'll be in that same boat with you with the three. All right, well, we lost Rob, but I'm still recording, so why don't I just keep going through the next couple of pickups from last year. So after Miller, Jaron Duran was the second most added player this week last year. His average price was $67. He was definitely worth it, in my opinion. Joey Lucchese was all the third player added in 53 leagues, average price of $47. Don't think that one ended up paying off. Jack Sawinski was added in 42 leagues for an average price of $52. I think he ended up being worth it. I think he went like 2010 or something like that. Let me just quickly see. Yeah, he went 26-13 last year. Average was 224, but I would say that was a hit. Brian Abreu, I think we were speculating potentially on a Presley injury. A couple points last year, I feel like we all were expecting him to go down. So Abreu was added in 35 leagues for an average price of $48. He gave you great Ks and ratios, but obviously never really took on that closer role. But I'll say that was a hit. Gratterall added in 39 leagues for an average price of $36. He chipped in with some couple saves and great ratios, but never actually really took on the role completely. Taylor Walls was added in 42 leagues for an average price of $29. That one, I mean, he gave you a bunch of steals and he had position flexibility, but it was a hit until he got hurt and kind of was striking out too much. Then Oswald Peraza was added in 20 leagues for an average price of $59. I would say that one didn't really pay off either. So it's just a good reminder of, you know, the players that we were adding, spending up for, you know, probably only about 20 to 30% of the time kind of paid off. So if you missed out on some of your big targets this week, just remind yourself that you might not regret it, and you might be better off spending your money, you know, trying to take multiple shots as the season goes on. So we're still missing Rob here. So I'll just keep going through the popular pickups from this week. So Pajas, as I mentioned, added in 57 leagues for an average price of $102. The only other player that was added in all the leagues was Jonathan Clase. He was added in 57 leagues for an average price of $61. You know, he's filling in right now for the Mariners. I think that role kind of opened up with the Dom Canzone injury. You know, Class A, he's been performing really well. Power, speed, And you know, I just think with the Mariners, how they've struggled offensively, there's a chance that he could carve out like in every, you know, full-time role. I mean, he's a switch hitter, and you know, they've kind of been doing the platoon game with Canzone and Luke Raley and a few other guys in their corner outfield. And you know, if Class A keeps performing and kind of you know, providing the power and speed and just being a bit of a spark plug, I think he could stick. And Albert Suarez and Mitchell Parker were added in 55 and 54 leagues for an average price of $40. You know, obviously Mitchell Parker had he faced the Astros and the Dodgers last week and kind of dominated both teams, so that was pretty impressive. And then Suarez kind of you know, after getting called up, building off the success he had in the spring on a good team with Baltimore, so I was interested in Suarez. I was kind of worried at what price he was going to go for. So I think I got him for like $30. I think there's a chance that when some of these starters come back for Baltimore, he kind of moves to their bullpen. But you know, for now I'll take whatever he can give. What did you have on those guys?
I was, you know, Parker just not, like you said, really handling the Dodgers and the Astros well. It's pretty crazy because as I was digging in prior to the start, I thought nothing of a guy who couldn't find a strike zone for 3 years in the minors, you know, 15% walk rate, 11%, 13%. It just, I couldn't believe that he was just wasn't throwing balls, you know, look at ball percentage, like, wow, this guy just all of a sudden fixed it. So I was a little hesitant in that, and despite the two starts, it was wonderful, and it definitely got the Sunday tax, which definitely drove the prices to places I didn't think it was going to go to, especially being on the Nationals. There was just like a lot of, I think, that went into, I guess, some of the higher-end prices. I was a little shocked that, you know, not to say it's a bad pick. It was just, I guess it was just a little off on what I thought the market was going to be for him. I went with, I guess, the minor league data over the two games. Could be completely wrong. The splitter is nasty, and him being a lefty, you don't see that much. So, could be an interesting pickup. Suarez, yeah, I didn't have, I had low bids on Suarez for a couple bucks. I was worried about the Penn situation. I was just worried about, too, he carved up the worst hitting team in the league in the Twins, you know, that strike out 30% of the time anyway. So,
right.
But shout out to Gecko. He was hard on the Albert Suarez train as soon as he had the one crazy outing in the spring that got everyone juiced up. So, and it's his guy. So, he's officially attached to Albert Suarez now.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, like, I don't know. I think there's a chance that, I mean, for me, like, even this two step, like for $30, I would pay $30 to get him for this two start week with his matchups against the Angels and then Oakland as well. And you know, the home park, until he, you know, if he gets removed from the rotation, like I think it's worth it. I was concerned he was going to go for like 80, 90, 100, but average price of $40, that one feels right to me. So I don't hate that. After those guys, a guy I was on, Sean Bouchard, 54 leagues, average price of $21. You know, I remember in my Vegas main when the news came across where Nolan Jones left that game after fouling a ball off his leg. I grabbed Bouchard at that time thinking he would be the obvious candidate to get any playing time if anybody, you know, corner outfielder goes down. Now with Bryant getting hurt, and then actually Nolan Jones got hurt tonight as well. You know, you're getting a guy that should play almost every day in Coors, but you know, obviously the Rockies can't hit for shit right now. So Coors or not, it's not really doing them any good. But I just think, like, you know, just kind of like how you did with Parker, I was looking at throughout his minor league career, you know, no big strikeout issues, double digit walk, you know, 20 and 10 type of profile throughout the minors, just kind of like what I was looking for. So, you know, I was pretty much right at the average. I got him for about 21, 22 bucks where I got him. So,
nice.
Yeah.
No, I love Bouchard. I drafted him in that same mold at the end of spring training. I thought he was going to make the team regardless, even before Nolan Jones got hurt. I just thought he was going to, like, but prior to him getting announced that he would go back to AAA, I thought he was definitely in line to, they were featuring him at the top of the lineup, you know, and I was like, oh, this is exciting. Steamer 600 loved him. And, hey, I had him in some waterfalls. I think where I had Páez high, he was higher than I won him for one league 8-7, but that was like my lowest bid on him out of all the spots I had him. You know, I had him bid on him in every league. That was the lowest one I had on him, just because I didn't really like truly need him on that team. It's just, I dumped Connor too because I thought that was going to be an upgrade. And I saw Connor sit 2 out of 6 games. I got a little worried that they were going to get him more rest days. And of course, he has 2 homers so far this week. Yeah. And so, but I think Bouchard, I think he needed an extra injury or another something happened for him to get 100% full PT. That always thought in the back of my mind, it might just be not all of it, you know? Yeah. So this might be what he needs to just fully be locked in. And I don't know what the Rockies waited for. Like you said, he's been absurdly above league average player at every level, you know?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So after Bouchard, Mark Leiter added in 53 leagues, average price $36. We kind of already covered that. Mm-hmm. Willy Abreu added in 49 leagues for an average price of $95. We did mention the kind of the craziness I had with Cora. So I was pretty much just hard. I was very reserved in my bids for Abreu. I kind of knew I wasn't going to get him, but, I was like in the 30s on him, and I was like, I know this isn't going to be enough, but I can't justify spending more of my fab and getting disappointed by whatever they end up doing with the playing time there. So I don't know. Did you end up with any Abreu?
I didn't end up with any Abreu. No, I love the skill set.
Yeah,
got him in a couple of DCs, and I like the blend of power, speed, and the opportunity that he was getting. He was taking total advantage of the Red Sox too, the team in itself being more aggressive on the base paths, and I thought that was nice. I had trouble deciphering whether if they were at full squad, what mm-hmm. his full output is. And but I definitely had interest in him, not as much interest as other people in my league. And so I didn't walk away with any Abreu.
Yeah, there were some hyper aggressive bids. I don't know if you have like the max, but I feel like I remember seeing like some bids on Abreu in like the 300s. So yeah, that was definitely
He was Max, definitely 350, and Matthew Shepard, who won the overall last year in the auction. He's in several of my league, but he was the most aggressive bidder on Abreu. You won him in most spots and for a decent chunk of change. So he feels strong about it, and he's definitely look back at him and being like, oh, guy did, you know, 15-30. And that could be a solid return, you know?
Yeah, and I think he hit a homer tonight or last night, you know, whatever night it is, Wednesday night. So or it's Wednesday morning. So I either hit one on Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday of this week. So, and you know, the K rate's coming down. So yeah, I can definitely see why, you know, people were pretty excited by him. It's just, you know, I'm a little scorned by with the other things that Cora's done. So I don't know. I'll probably end up regretting not getting a little more aggressive for him. So after Abreu, Hector Neris added in 45 leagues for an average price of $78. I mean, yeah, we also covered this situation already, but I just, that feels like so much for me.
Definitely fair.
Yeah. Sano added in 45 leagues for an average price of $22. You know, with the Rendon injury, seems like, you know, he's going to get some playing time there. And honestly, what's his name? Drury's been banged up also. So you could definitely, carve out like a decent amount of playing time at third, which I never really thought we would see Miguel Sano at third base in the major leagues ever again in his career. After kind of, but, you know, he's gotten, he's slimmed down a lot, and he looked, you know, he looks a lot better this year than the last time we saw him on the Twins.
Yeah, without a doubt. I believe not this past week, because I still had him in the write-up for my Fab column this past weekend, but 2 weekends ago, I wrote and I asked, I said, is our want of Luis Renjifo's full-time PT blinding us to the fact that Sano is back and is playing and is hitting the shit out of the ball? And because I felt like it was kind of, everyone was hung up over Renjifo, and he's not playing as much, and why isn't he starting? And like, we're kind of ignoring the fact that Sano looked good, you know, and it's crazy. I had him too. He was probably right in line with, right behind Bouchard, you know, of probably like Páez, Abreu, Bouchard, and like Sano was right behind them as just a guy that was in all my strings, that he was available and trying to get a piece of. He looks good, man, and I think he's gonna work out for. Doesn't have to be, the whole season, right? And I think the prices that he went for, even in the last, 2 or 3 weeks, I think Phil got him, Phil Lasso got him several weeks ago. You know, he was kind of on that train early too. And a couple of other people that were really leaning into him possibly getting some full-time PT. And it looked like a shrewd move 2 weeks ago. And then it kind of like slipped out of that PT and they may have let go and re-added this weekend, you know?
Right,
Because of that. But again, even if it's just like a 2-3 month stretch of him getting really hot and banging out some power for them, you know, I think it's a great ad. And he's still available in leagues too. So, be interesting to see if he's 100% by the end of this weekend, which I'm guessing he will be if he keeps playing.
Yep. Michael Massey added in 40 leagues, average price of $20. I don't know if he was already owned in a couple of leagues, but. So, yeah, I guess you mentioned that he wasn't 100% owned yet, right? So I guess there's just some people that weren't as excited about him as I was, that he's still out on the wire a bit. Let's just bang through these last couple pitchers. Did you have any interest in like Landon Knack or Jake Irvin? They were added in 37 leagues. Knack was added in 37 leagues for an average price of $17, and then Irvin was added in 34 leagues for an average price of $26. I know Irvin's velo's up a little bit, right? And then obviously he pitched really well against the Dodgers last week. So, kind of, I feel like any of these Nats pitchers kind of jumped on the radar once, people saw how they performed against the Dodgers.
Yeah. I've been on the Jake Irvin train since last
2 years now.
If anyone, as anyone listening to the Matt Modica pod that we do on the Patreon, the starting pitching pod, they know I've been acutely aware to that. It just, he's just one of those guys too. Like, he dove into, again, really diving into pitchers on a weekly basis and what's new with them, you know, especially in main events, you're really trying to just gain anyone onto your team. So anyway, last year I was just really looking at him a lot, and it's like, oh, every week kind of like up the velo a little bit and got better and better with swing and strike. And then it just continued this season, you know, toyed around with the pitch mix too. And just a lot of good things about him. And I think it's very difficult to find on the wire 16% K minus walk starting pitchers with a 3.65 Sierra. And that's just a good line. Like, he's improving all the way around. So yeah, I had interest in him. I actually let go of him in one league because he was just a victim of, there was one of the teams I was talking about, my auction team, that offense is just disgusting. And just a victim of, I was riding the 6 starting pitcher train, you know, as they do in a lot of my 15 team earlies. And he was just I cut him in Montas. Because I just really needed to add offense. I actually added Kyle Manzardo in that league because my first baseman is Carlos Santana, and there's nothing available on the wire. So I just, I was like a speculative, hopefully he comes up and I can have a decent first baseman, because Carlos Santana was good last year, Dom. But
he's been dog shit.
Complete dog shit, 100%. So, but yeah, no, I like Jake Irvin. I think he's gonna be serviceable for the whole season.
Yeah. I keep telling people this. Like, the Nats are kind of a sneaky team. I think they're putting the pieces together. Like, you know. Obviously, I like a lot of the hitters they're bringing up, and you know, we might see James Wood. So we might be here talking next week about some big James Wood bids. Hopefully not, because both you and I have a lot of Lane Thomas, but. I think that's the speculation on Twitter, is that they might call him up if he's hurt. So we'll see. Tom's getting an MRI tomorrow. So what about Landon Knack? So this was one where, you know, I was thinking about it, because the fact that the Dodgers didn't just like send him down right away, to me, I was like, oh, is this guy going to stick around for another turn or two until Buehler's ready? And then I was kind of looking at like the last couple starts that Gavin Stone has had, and you know, he's kind of becoming a little more hittable, kind of becoming the Gavin Stone that we saw last year. And then, I mean, James Paxton's like walking a ton of guys, and you know, Knack's first start wasn't really bad, so I was like, is there an opportunity that Knack just like sticks around, you know, even, you know, until Buehler's back, or even potentially after Buehler's back? So that was kind of the thought I was having with myself. I didn't end up bidding on him anywhere, but I don't know, what were your thoughts on that?
He was on my list as a possible streamer, because I believe he's facing Miami this week.
I think it's the Nats. I think it's the Nats tomorrow.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's night. Yeah. So that was, I was looking at that a little bit. I watched his outing, and I think he's okay. You know, I think he's honestly, nothing pops out to me. If anything, it's a lot of that BABIP suppression that the Dodgers do so well, right? And he didn't impress me with the 41% ball percentage and 37% first pitch strike. Yeah. I think that's like, I don't know. Again, one super small game to be saying, oh, like, that's not right. But I don't know.
There was excitement,
but there wasn't too much, I guess.
The way I kind of read it was like, I thought he was just going to be up for the spot start, and then they were just going to send him down and call up a reliever or something like that, that they would need for like the next time through the rotation. The fact that he stuck around on the roster up until this week, I'm like, huh, like, I wonder if there's something there, like, but yeah, I guess we'll see how he does tomorrow. And, you know, just again, a thought I was having. And then, so, I mean, you kind of touched on the fact that you cut Irvin, and even though Irvin was a popular ad, and I don't, you know, the one thing that I added to the file that I normally send you was that I wanted to, like, in my list of players that were popular ads, I also wanted to see players that were dropped, because I think it's like an interesting dynamic to look at these players that were ads in one spot and then drops in another spot. I think like Zach mentioned that in his article, was like he picked up a guy that was added in two leagues and then dropped in like 9 or 12 leagues or something like that. And he's like, that pickup to drop ratio isn't in our favor. And I was like, oh, that's like an interesting way of looking at it. So I added those drops, and like, so the guys that were added in double digit leagues and also dropped in double digit leagues, there are three guys. Stanek was added in 20 leagues and dropped in 11 leagues. Curtis Mead was dropped in or added in 14 leagues and dropped in 12 leagues. And then Rene Pinto was added in 10 leagues and dropped in 10 leagues. Like, I don't really think there's like much to even gather from this, because, but it is interesting to see like certain players that are popular ads in one spot and also popular drops. Like there's some guys that are just dropped in one or two leagues, and that could just be like a roster crunch thing. But yeah, it's a view I'm going to take going forward, is like, if I add a guy that's being like widely dropped somewhere else, it'll kind of just, be interesting to look at.
I like that ad. And I think with the Mead thing, I could totally see the ads, and I could maybe see the drops if someone's looking ahead and thinking about Jonathan Aranda, you know, getting into a rehab assignment, or Josh Lowe coming off the IL, and, you know, like all those things. And
yeah, and they have a lot of righties coming up, like, too, as well, where, like, if you think that his playing time was just predicated on, like, a lot of lefties,
he was actually dropped for Sano in three leagues. So that's like, someone just thought maybe that was an equal trade off to, you know, getting some power for a guy who may be losing some PT. And Mead, I think Mead, you know, we haven't seen enough of him yet, but it just maybe just seems like there might be a cap to what he is. I mean, he stole two bags in one game, which kind of threw me off, but I guess like the hard hit stuff hasn't been impressive yet for him overall. But I could totally see if someone wanted to move on in anticipation of the Rays being a Rays soon.
Yeah. Well, it's going to get crowded, like you said. Like, hopefully with Caminero coming up soon, Randa's getting healthy. I don't know when Brandon Lau's coming back, but, and yeah, like you said, Josh Lowe too. Probably shifts Ahmed Rosario back to more of like an infielder role versus like kind of him getting some outfield starts. So, yeah, a lot of moving pieces for the Rays. As you would expect. So obviously this recording has been a little funky, but is there anybody that we didn't touch on that from an ads or drops perspective that you wanted to talk about?
I guess one guy I had in my bid list and I was just a little torn on how I truly felt about it was David Schneider, because I love the profile. I have him on a lot of the later DCs I did. And when I was trying to break down the recent influx of extra PT, I was trying to determine, like, is he just spot starting everyone, or is he taking over for Biggio? And Biggio is becoming like the utility player, you know? So
yeah.
I think he was the one I struggled with the most. I probably regretted not being a little bit more aggressive with him. You know, like, he was probably around the Sano range for me, just because I just didn't know truly, like, because I had the one game that Springer was ill, and it was probably going to just be Biggio at second that game, which Springer started, and he started that game, and it was like back-to-back righties. Then he sat the next day, then he started again on Sunday at second base, and that's when I was like trying to figure it out. I'm like, all right, is so you have kind of Falefa who had the day off, his day off on Sunday, you know, and I was like, well, is it just, is he just the spot guy or is he becoming the guy, you know? And so I had a little bit of a tough, I think, route gauging his PT. It looks like he might just be getting it now, which
yeah,
I think he still probably deserved it from the start, but it's still risky, I think, a little bit. But definitely a good play on a lot of the ads. I think everyone who added him this week was the right move to just speculate on him at least possibly moving into a full-time role. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even if you look at his playing time this week, though, like yesterday he played left when Kiermaier had the day off. And then today he played second and Biggio had the day off. Yeah. I mean, he's hitting higher up in the order than some of these other guys like Kiner Falefa, Kiermaier, Biggio. So, you know, maybe it's just, yeah, his position is going to be rotating, but like he'll still be hitting like sixth, right? And they'll all just kind of be rotating a bit. And, you know, if he's playing like four out of every 5 days, it's probably worth it. So, yeah, he was somebody I was looking at as well. And I was in the same spot. I was listening to your Fab Pod and I kind of agreed. Like, it's tough to really gather whether or not he's going to be playing every day or if it's just certain guys getting days off or sick or things like that. So that's why I was like, I had him in my bid list, but he was in like the $5 range, and I had like a like Adam Duvall stream with all the lefties they have, and like Brent Rooker has a lot of lefties coming up, and Jock Peterson just with a lot of righties for this. So he's kind of like, I prioritized the guys that I knew would be playing at least this week, like every day, given the platoon matchups they were facing over Schneider. But yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah, I think that was the only guy really anything extra to say about, you know?
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, I mean, I think we covered everything that I had.
You want to talk about a couple of the drops, like maybe the Wilson Alvarez, listen to me,
Francisco. Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, I mentioned my end of it was I was willing to wait the distance that it was to keep him, except for like I already had Sean Murphy out with all of other injuries in my offense blew. So I like didn't have any time to waste on holding, and I had to be cutthroat with him. I did straight up in a neutral, healthy bench and, you know, can stream a decent catcher every week. I would have held to him as long as I could. Obviously, like my plan was to hold until I couldn't. But, you know, I think he was dropped in a lot less league than I thought it was going to be. I don't know if you felt the same way.
I mean, I don't know. I wasn't put in this situation because I've kind of whiffed on Alvarez everywhere. I tried to get him my last couple of drafts in Vegas and didn't work out. So, you know, I don't know. He's saying that he's going to be back in 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks. Kind of feels like very aggressive to me. I know when they said that players, when they have their UCL thumb tear, it's 8 weeks, but I didn't see them say that about catchers. Like catchers' thumbs take a lot more abuse than, you know, a right fielder's.
Thumbs. That's a team name, Dom. Catcher's thumbs. Please.
Yeah.
Make it now.
I just think like for 8 weeks for surgery on his UCL to be, you know, catching 95 mile an hour fastballs, like, you know, 180 times a game. It takes a much larger toll. I just have a hard time believing that he's going to be back in 8 weeks. I hope he is for our Mets' sake, but I think it's going to be hard for him to get back that quick. And it's a long hold. I mean, we were in that situation with like Josh Young. It's tough to hold a guy that long on your bench, especially given the fact that you're already probably, you know, just with how the season has gone. If you have Alvarez, you probably already have two or three injured guys already on your bench. So that are like hopefully going to be back before him. So it's just, I totally get it. If you're just crunched and you're just saying like, hey, I got to cut the guy that's the farthest away from helping my team, cause I need help now. And he's not doing that. So that's probably what it came down to
for most people.
At least. Yeah, for most people, that's what I'm thinking.
I think on the flip, the one thing I 100%, and this is, again, why I was thinking if I was healthy, I would have held as long as I could have, is on the flip side of it, I think about how we drafted catchers as a whole in the NFBC, right? In draft champions, in online championships, in Maine, there was that rush to get those really good catchers that stood out. Mm-hmm. And looking at the wire, you realize why you did that.
Yep.
Right? So, yeah, it makes sense. Be cutthroat, use the spot, get some production. But then you look and you say, do I really want fucking Carson Kelly? You know, do I want Jose Trevino? Maybe. But that's like... Again, it was for me, at least when I peeled back from it, it was a good reminder of why everyone was so aggressive with catchers.
Yeah.
You know, just seeing the list and just seeing what you have to go to it's bare. So I could see the hole for that sense. Like just saying, oh shit, you know, in 2 months, maybe even three if I have to, I'm gonna get this bull. He's gotta control himself, Dom. I love the kid, and I love energy and passion. I'm never going to tell anyone to take away energy because, like, that's, I think, lacks in this game, like, hustle that you could visibly see. But the thing is, he moves so fast for someone who's so built, and there's so many movements he makes, whether it's throwing, swinging, or running, where I'm like, bro, I love you, but like control this. When he was running so fast. First of all, I thought his knee blew out. Never mind the thumb. You know, when he made the stop and he fell over, I'm like, oh, that's an ACL.
Yeah.
But
I thought of Ronnie Mauricio because like that's how he hurt his knee in the winter. It was like he was just turning first really hard and went down, and I was just like, oh God. But,
and again, this is not a don't be aggressive thing. I love that part of anyone who plays with every ounce of aggression for every step. But he's so big and so like short that sometimes he scares me. Again, I see a lot of times when he's running where he's just running so fast. He either turns a base where he's like tripping, and it's like I just feel nervous when I watch him because even like when he runs for some foul balls, like sometimes he doesn't slow down or quick enough before the fence where I get really nervous. Like he's going to plow into the fence. He just moves fast and he's huge. And I hope he comes back soon, man. It's just,
I blame myself for it. I bought my son a City Connect Alvarez jersey. So, you know,
you didn't ask me if I wanted one.
Yeah. Well, you know, fuck, they bang you for like $125 for a youth.
No,
small,
and it's like a 125 banger.
Yep. So I didn't even look at what the cost was for an adult, but I'm sure it was like over $200. So, you know,
drops I was looking at, bro. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
Parker Meadows, Chris Paddock. 9 drops. What's your thoughts here? Did you drop any of them?
I mean, I have Parker Meadows in a spot or two. Didn't drop them. Went to the bench. Okay. I think I have 2 Parker Meadows, and then I have no Paddock. I hard fade for on Paddock for me. I knew, and you know, just for me, like last year, I get that he was throwing harder, but he was not pitching as a starting pitcher when he came back last year. He's pitching as a reliever. So like, I was comfortable fading him in the winter when his price went from like a round 30 DC guy to like a round 18 DC guy. I was like, I'm not messing with that stuff. So I got no Paddock. Meadows, I was benching, not ready to cut yet, just because, you know, I like the fact that they're sticking with him even as he's struggling, and, you know, kind of showed a little bit of signs of life, that homer he smashed at the end of last week. You know, it was like to dead center in Detroit, you know, in the cold, like, I don't know, it just like reminded me of like what he could do. And, he, you know, he's still stealing bases. And like I said, the playing time's still there. I'll still hang on to him with the hopes that he can kind of turn it around. I ended up having to put him back into my lineup when Machado went on the paternity list early this week. So I did get the benefit of his Monday. I believe he had a homer on Monday. So yeah, I'm not ready to cut yet, but he's squarely in the bench until further notice club for me.
All right. Yeah, I, my partner team with Dylan White, we decided to move on.
Yeah, you cut him?
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that was easy for me, but, mm-hmm. But, you know.
Yeah.
Gotta do it.
I understand
you gotta
it.
Work, you gotta work as a team, and that was the decision that I think was best for what we were trying to achieve at the moment. So mm-hmm. Hopefully I don't miss him too much. But, you know, I have those 19,000 DC teams that I have him on just to,
you know.
you got
plenty.
One of my early L's, you know, if he doesn't turn it around, is him, Tommy Pham, and Sheehan.
Fham should be back tomorrow.
Yeah, sure. But,
so.
I've already missed him enough weeks where I'm like, I don't want to play you yet, bro, because you're not supposed to be here yet. It's supposed to be Tommy Pham filling this role. So I'm mad at him. No, I'm not mad at him. I'm mad at MLB.
Yeah.
Paddock was, I had him just on a couple of DC, not a lot of teams, but I actually had him on my CLQ, and I had spent a lot of time figuring out if I wanted to start him this week because I, you know, obviously loved the White Sox matchup, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. And you know, even went to two starts, but I just was looking at his individual start and the repertoire, and I'm just like, I don't know, I need to see something first, especially in my CLQ where I'm being a little extra judicious with my moves and my ad,
right.
You know, my ads and not my ad drop, my start sits.
So
I was like, you know what, in case you, like Matty Modica says, two times the pain, in case I run into two times the pain, you know, I don't want to do it. But that start definitely helped him turn around. He had some extra whip on his fastball. Then he you know, went the whole, he sustained it through the game. So I thought that was impressive. So,
another start like that, I'll start regretting, fading him for sure.
Against a better team for sure too. Like you feel better about it.
Who does he have the second start of the week?
Let me look it up. He's got the Angels.
Okay. All right. Well, a little bit better of an offense, but he could also dominate them. So
I scooped up in one league. This was, I guess, not a drop this week, but a drop the other week. And some leagues was Griffin Canning, who I have, you know, was very high on in the offseason and the draft season. And he was dropped in my main. And, you know, the one game of additional velo. And I talked about that too. And my daily pod, just like that extra velo is such a difference for him. Like he doesn't have enough of it that way he could lose a little bit of it. So when he got a little bit of it back, I was willing to just take a steep price, a nice cheap stab, 22-20. I want him back. Not want him back. I didn't drop him in the first place, but I was happy to get that little win. Hopefully, if he turns it back around for real, you know.
Yeah. I cut him 2 weeks ago. So 2 weeks ago.
Cutthroat calls in full effect for you.
Yeah, it's kind of the situation we talked about where it's like if I can't trust him, and you know, I didn't know that he was going to get a little bit of the velo back, but I think I got to the point with him where we were talking about with Matt's, where it's like, you know, if you can't trust the guy to start and you know you're not going to put him in this week, like, you know, what are you doing? So I think he was the sacrifice for me to get Yates in a couple of spots. So, I think it turned out okay, at least thus far. So
yeah, good stuff. All right, yeah, that's all I really wanted to mention. Oh, and rest in peace, Victor Scott, as well on the Fab, one of the highest drops after with Puck and David Hamilton.
Rest in peace, my CLQ. DC with Victor Scott in it. killing my batting average for a couple weeks.
Worst part is
I don't have anybody to replace him until Tommy Pham comes up. So I've already lamented about that before the pod with you. So
it's amazing. It's really some draft champion team where you're just like, fuck, I really don't have any options. It's fucking May. And it's either because like one, like, on most of my teams, it's a blend of injuries and guys who I just picked in the later stage of the draft to hopefully have for the second half, you know, like your Joey Lopez-Fitos and your Blake Dunn of the world, like those guys where you're like, it's nice looking profile in the minors. Maybe they'll come up in the second half, but yeah, those early injuries plus those, especially like you said, of Victor Scott. That's why, you know, as we were discussing, Steve Weimer, who's in his accustomed spot in the top of the overalls of the draft champions, just teams are just built on this amazing depth where he's not taking any zeros at all.
The things I would do to have like the decisions that he gets to make with that team in my DCs. My DC setting has been very efficient this year because I have very little decisions to make. It's just, is this person in the majors? Yes. Okay, you're in my lineup. If you're not, you're on my bench. And there's not many MLB, you know, guys currently active in the MLB that are on my bench. So my lineup setting in DCs has been very quick this year, which has not been the case in previous years. I normally am agonizing about, which of these five guys am I going to put as my fifth outfielder? And like, this year I don't have those decisions. They're pretty much made for me. So
made on its own. I mean, I think we both consider ourselves pretty like decent DC players. We take pride in like our preparation for it and being able to scan the whole player pool. But if I walked into a build your own, you know, fantasy baseball player shop, I would pay up for the Steve Weimer draft champions. You know, like if there's a portion that's prorated to you being able to pay, you know, I'd spend a lot of my allotment on the Steve Weimer draft champion brain part of it.
I agree.
That's who I want to come back in my next life as, just to dominate DCs. Cool. Good stuff. All right. Great. I know we had a lot of problems through the episode, but we made it through.
Yeah, we made it through.
Yeah, nobody will realize that, but it's fun to talk about. Cool, good stuff. We got anything else before you want to beat this place out?
No, I'm all set.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Don't be a bag of shit. Peace.